Let's listen to the sound of a musician evolving. The musician is Herbie Hancock. The tune is Watermelon Man, a hit he says he named after a fruit seller he'd seen in his hometown of Chicago. After that hit in 1962, Herbie Hancock played piano for trumpeter Miles Davis. And Hancock went through several more musical changes before this. Rocket was a giant hit in 1983, making use of record-scratching sounds Hancock had heard from hip-hop artists. Now in his 70s, Herbie Hancock writes about this sweeping career in a memoir titled Possibilities. He says one of his musical changes came to him in the 1970s. He was practicing Buddhist chants he used much of his life.
The kind of music I had been playing before with a band that we now called Mwandishi Band was that band, and the direction of the music was very far out space music, untethered. And I got a little tired of it.
You wanted to be tethered.
I wanted to do something that was a little more earthy, you know. And the funny thing was, I had been listening to people like Sly Stone and James Brown, but playing a music that was very, very far removed from that. So I actually had broken up that band, but I didn't know what I wanted to do from that point on. And so that was one of the things I was chanting for, was to recognize the direction I wanted to go in.
When you describe chanting, for those who've never done it, what's the experience?
The chant itself is Nam Myoho Renge Kyo. What we believe is the sound that actually connects everything in the universe. So I was chanting, and all of a sudden, I'm starting to hear that song, Thank You for Letting Me Be Myself Again, Sly Stone. And so I'm chanting, Nam-myoho Renge Kyo, Nam-myoho Renge Kyo. And then in my mind, I'm hearing, Thank you for letting me be myself again. Yeah, and all of a sudden I started thinking of my band playing this funky music, you know. So I made a change in my life at that point, and I decided that this is something I want to explore.
This is a reworked, just barely recognizable funk version of his old hit Watermelon Man. You were criticized for that change.
Oh, yeah. Fortunately, I had learned so much from Miles Davis prior to that about, you know, being able to stand up for what you believe in and to... But that's the only way you can really respect yourself. And I had to be true to my own convictions.
Some people will know that you were in Miles Davis's band as a younger man. And you write about him as a band leader. And the thing that stands out most, perhaps, is that he would give you instructions that no one understood.
I wouldn't state it exactly like that.
That's a little too bald? Okay.
I would describe it as saying that Miles might say something and you might not understand it at the time that he said it, but you would immediately go on a quest to try to figure out what he meant by that. And in that quest, you would find your own answers. And great mentors do that. They're able to help you to discover your own truth.
What was something that he said to you that didn't make sense to you at first and that you had to go work on?
One time, I was kind of depressed because I felt that my playing had kind of gotten in a rut. And he leaned over to me, and I thought what he said was, put a B in the bass. And
put a B in the bass.
Right. But he said, put a B in the bass. So I put this note, the note B.
Okay.
And it didn't really work. But I searched around. And I found something that actually worked. And then I looked over at Miles, you know, expecting to get his approval. And then he looked at me and kind of shrugged his shoulders and he said, see? You know, like he was taking credit for what I had done. And I was, why is he taking credit?
Well, he pushed you. He pushed you toward that solution.
That's exactly right. He deserves the credit because what he did was he set me out on a path to find my own answer.
I want to ask about another subject that's difficult, but that you choose to address here, and that you say you've written about for the first time. Some people will be surprised to learn that you were addicted to crack.
Yep.
And not as a young man. What happened?
I wanted to see what was it everybody was talking about that was supposed to be so dangerous. I knew heroin was extremely dangerous and could kill you. Yeah, cocaine could, I mean, kill you, but it's not the same kind of killer that heroin is. And I tried it. And the first time I inhaled it, I knew I had made a major mistake. And I said to myself, oh, I said, I've never done this. I had no idea that I'd stepped over that line that I had drawn. Even though I kept it to a kind of minimum because I was so afraid and embarrassed about what I was doing that I spaced things apart I had long breaks between when I would do that. But mm-hmm. This went on for a few years.
You describe disappearing on your way home from the airport one night and your family having to track you down. That was what led to what you describe as an intervention, although I guess it was kind of an improvised intervention. Everybody came together and told you this is it.
What happened is I came home from one of these, quote, sessions, unquote, and my wife said, you know, come into this, one of my other rooms. And my daughter was there and two other really, really close friends of mine. And I just broke down crying because I was high. And I was embarrassed beyond belief. But a part of me was relieved because I knew it was the end of the line for something that I wanted to end, but I wasn't able to do it really by myself. And I needed to go to rehab, and that was what did it. And I haven't gone back to that since, and I never will.
Did drugs ever affect your music in any way, for better or for worse?
I can answer that simply. No, it didn't help. I tried to separate the two.
I want to ask about one other thing, Herbie Hancock. You describe a moment on stage of playing with a group, and everything's falling together, and you describe yourself even looking down at your own fingers, and they seem to be on their own and playing brilliantly. What's it feel like when you're in a moment like that?
It felt like I was watching myself play. Everything that I touched seemed to work. But it wasn't just me. It was the whole band it was the Mondishi band. And it was just a moment where it felt like somehow we were all so unified that I felt like the energy of the bass player and the drummer and the saxophonist, they were all like in me, many in body, one in mind. That's a phrase we use in Buddhism. And it was incredible.
So if you were to step up on stage tomorrow night, would you be looking to recreate that moment of transcendence from years and years ago?
No, because I'm not looking to create anything that I did before. I'm looking to create the moment that I'm actually living in at that moment. And frankly, that's what jazz really is about anyway.
The memoir by Herbie Hancock is called Possibilities. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Steve.